up, Daddy Yo and Jazz ladies out there? This your boy, Sasha Also, broadcasting live from the cabaret in the sky. And when I'm not busy doing my soloing on my two horns, I just tune into the Artifice Presents. We all be news and radio. Oh, yeah.
James Reese Europe, Jazz Lieutenant, which is featured on the Smithsonian Institute's recommended jazz books for kids and young adults list, is available on Amazon.com. Get your autographed copy of the award-winning James Reese Europe, Jazz Lieutenant at the official website, www.jazzlieutenant.blogspot.com. Once again, get your autographed copy at www.jazzlieutenant.blogspot.com.
Ask not what we all be can do for you. Ask what you can do for we all be.
We all be needs you to join the movement. On April 10th, 2006, a movement was born. Please give to grow the cause today. We All Be has grown from being just an idea and a blog to a multimedia force of nature for true information dissemination to uplift, empower, and liberate the masses in the 21st century. The people must know before they can act. It takes a village to raise a child, but it also takes a village to raise a movement. We All Be needs the village to respond in order to ensure that the We All Be movement grows up to its fullest potential. Please send your love donations or donate your spare change for change via our PayPal link located on our official website, weallbe.blogspot.com, or mail your love donations to the following address. Attention, Ronald Heard II, the We All Be Group Incorporated, P.O. Box 752062, Memphis, Tennessee 38175. Your financial support would help us continue our mission to educate the masses via We All Be News, radio, and TV. And please remember, we all be in it to win it. So get in the game and do your part today. We love you madly.
Nobody else. in every city, definition of power. Players, are you ready? See, the war is the prophecy, survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets in time, yeah, these devils petrified of a nigga in his right mind. And tell us that we hopeless and hell bound. It's for the brothers, the penitentiary, jail down. I got you with my heart until the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's a thug's wrath. Political contracts and bloodbaths. From a Tulu Shakur up in the rocket, though they got you. I never let them stop me, the struggle continues.
Gotta get out of town. See, I done shot another zit. Nigga be rolling trips to keep his mind on sit. They check him for parole, they supervise my whole side. Money wise, surprise, drug dealers on the rise. These carjacks is federal, you soft and shreddable. Dictionary rappers, you come at me all edible. I let back your crew, like you know what I'm about. Get it out, cause fatal done hit up another house. These props and pretty niggas getting played like drunk. Fucking up these fat grumps, fronting on blunt. Blast these bitch niggas, bullshitting on the body. Kill niggas browner than me, and you can ask Bobby. Slip shooter and looter, killer smoke the Buddha. Man, it's dirty money, can't get a little cuter. Money and hoes, recipes and out, storm murder case just closed.
Trying to do is make a penny, but crooked cops beating down my door like I beat down Rev No Denny. Stay in position with their shotguns, but if they kick in my door like I know they kept a hot one. They kicked it in, no flip got BS. Now I'm on the run, living life as a fugitive. The cops was deep, they made a clean sweep. I tried to break a cop, one in the ass.
Drugs smelling from the underworld, thug and desperado. Visual promotion from my Teflon hollow. Transgressor, racketeer, probation violator. Bust a test to no fear for an ego out slayer. My future's unknown, who she's on the phone calling me. Walking down the street from my house trying to follow me. Boundaries restricted for a thug unconstitutional. Falling out of control from LA to Puerto Rico.
I'm bleeding bad, and now I need a doctor. But I can't do shit until I take this helicopter. A gangbanger, dope slanger, full of anger. I killed the cop, now they want me on a coat
we
hanger.
We smoke opium, soak weed, and greed ain't a common though. Dog I'm in need, indeed, ain't no option, bro. Cookies and chips, I got a street education. My homie's stressing out cause his baby mama's basing. What am I chasing? A relationship with God or a female? Niggas don't care, why just supposed to bail? Fuck jail and the CO for my niggas in the pen. Treated like a dog for a sin. Fuck a friend, let my 64 bend. Blockade, cause I fade back streets. L.A. East High, Compton, Long Beach. Murderous killers, lunatic kamikaze. We drop bodies and throw parties, the struggle continues.
Fuck the peace, they keep a nigga upset. Cause if they see me in the biz, I know them fools wanna sweat. I guess they think that low infos are had shit. Try to pull me over, I'm gonna kill that ass bitch. Cause I'm from niggas and yours, nigga. And I know you heard that we all cop killers. My young homies love that shit like a sport. They'd rather kill a cop than play a basketball court. And we gon' stick with the hate. You think it's over cause you got rid of that fool Bill Gates. But he's still in the back calling shots. So we gon' stay in the hood killing cops.
This is Judge Joe Brown, and we're listening to We All Be News. News-free Dixie for the 21st century.
Welcome, every family, to another wonderful edition of the Artivist Presents We All Be News and Radio. I'm your host for this empowerment segment. I'm sorry we had some tech difficulties. I'm just trying to work out things right now. I was just trying to see what works best for everybody. And I look forward to you all joining this conversation. A very important conversation. Yes, indeed. And let's call. Area code 646-652-4593. Once again, area code 646-652-4593. Once again, that's area code 646-652-4593. If you scared to get on the air, we'll open up the chat room and just try to clear up some things. Like, you know, the devil's busy when you try to get the word out. But like a friend of mine, Dr. Willie Jolly, once said, a setback is a setup for a comeback. So I just came back. But don't call it a comeback. Just call it, hey, it is what it is. It comes with the territory. So what's today's topic about? It's black church genocide. That's right, boys and girls. scholars and laymen, Black Church Genocide. I don't know if people have been noticing anything, because a lot of times we are not paying attention. We're asleep. We're on autopilot. But I have noticed a trend this summer. I told people, I warned people that this summer was going to make the red summer of 1919 look like spring vacation or spring. And I have yet to disappoint. You know, the mass shootings are real. People talk about false flags, but it's a trend I'm noticing. I have been noticing since the beginning of summer, or right before the beginning of summer. If you look at the Emmanuel 9 shooting that took place at Mother Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. If you look at what happened to Sister Sandra Bland, her arrest and assault took place on the properties of Hope AME Church on University Drive, right by Prairie View A&M. Yes, that's right. Her arrest and assault by State Trooper Insignia took place on the property of Hope AME Church. Did that sink in? And then you go to July 17th, 2015, the murder of Darius Stewart in Memphis. 19 years old, was killed by a cop after a traffic stop for a busted headlight, but the cop interrogated him and he was a passenger. How you gonna do a traffic stop and the dude that you end up arresting wasn't even driving the car? And you ask for his ID. Okay, he was killed on the properties of New Direction Church in Memphis, Tennessee. So you got three separate incidents, three different states, but all happened at Black churches. Mother Emmanuel Church, AME, Charleston, South Carolina. Hope African Methodist Episcopal Church down in Prairie View, outside of Prairie View A&M on University Drive, Sandra Bland, and Brother Darius Stewart, New Direction Church. And this basically all happened within, dang, were you talking, okay, all this happened in 1 month time. June 17th, Mother Emmanuel. July the 13th, Sister Sandra Bland. July 17th, Brother Darius Stewart. So you had Black church terror that's happened in within a month's time. And we're not even counting the 6 to 7 or more even Black churches that were burned throughout the South. So now do you see that there's an attack on the Black church? But the Black church, the leadership is very, very, very quiet. They had a chance in Charleston to take a stand. Charleston is very important to the history of this country, South Carolina, in general, but also Charleston. Because you see back on April 12th, 1861, that's where the Civil War started. You had Fort Sumter out in Charleston Harbor. That's where they started the Civil War. That is also where the person who designed the Confederate battle flag, which had been on a lot of controversy, William Porcher Miles, who was a former congressman from South Carolina. He was known as one of the Fire Eaters. The Fire Eaters would be what was the Dixiecrats was back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. They were the secessionists. But the Fire Eaters, he was one of the Fire Eaters in Congress. He also was an academic. I believe he was the dean or president of Charleston College. I could be mistaken, but he was an academic. He was a congressperson. He designed the Confederate battle flag. A white supremacist. Okay, he made no mistake. He talked about being a proud white supremacist. So the creator of the Confederate flag was a proud white supremacist. So the hate is a part of the heritage, boys and girls, scholar and layman. But let me get back. So you had all this church terrorism within a month's time. You had about almost 10 Black churches burned down under suspicious circumstances. You had 9 Black folks killed at Bible study on Wednesday night. You had 1 Black person arrested and assaulted by the authorities on her way to an early grave. You had another brother arrested and he's not even arrested. He didn't get a chance to get the handcuffs on, from my understanding. Assaulted by police in Memphis on church ground on his way to an early grave. Where is the black church? Where is the official statement? Like I said, they had a chance in Charleston to make a stand during the funeral services for Reverend Pinckney, who was also a state senator from Charleston. The brother who led, Mother Emanuel, who was assassinated by allegedly white supremacist Dylann Roof. And my thing about people, I hear a lot of so-called conscious black folks and a lot of black folks, well-meaning black folks, they say suspect racist, suspect white supremacist. Racism benefits who in this system? So when you understand who benefits mostly from this racism, white supremacy thing, there are no such thing as suspects. Okay, there's nothing suspect about it, So let's stop dealing with that game. And also, let me say once more that racism is not an illness. It's not a mental illness. It's a system. It's not a mental illness. It is a system. So the black church has been quiet. Like they had their chance, like I said, at the funeral at Reverend Pinckney, Edward Pinckney, to take a definitive stand. But instead, they wanted to put on a musical. They wanted to sing songs. Even Obama joined in the musical. I thought I was looking at an updated version of Porgy and Bess, because Porgy and Bess is from Charleston. It's funny how these Negro spirituals and musicals come from the most repressive and oppressive places for black folk. Because I talked about Old Man River. You look at Mississippi River. Look at the towns on the Mississippi River. You look at New Orleans. You look at Memphis, you look at St. Louis, you go all the way to Davenport, Iowa. These are some of the most, I call them plantation towns, plantation river towns, some of the most oppressive, repressive cultures for black folks. But black folks have actually thrived under these conditions from a creative point of view. Now, a lot of y'all will be surprised to learn that the concept of public education actually came from two black politicians from South Carolina. I'll let you do the research on that one. I'm not going to fill you in on everything, but the concept of what we know as public education today actually came from two black men who were politicians in the state of South Carolina. And you look at, even when people talk about Mississippi with the Confederate flag, look how many brilliant black folks come out of a state like Mississippi from all different types of industries and human activities. And I look at the same thing with South Carolina. A lot of brilliant black folks come out of those circumstances. So, this is why I feel like I have so much to say. Because they're not talking about the black church being under attack on CNN. And CNN is like black folks' Krispy Kreme crack. Black folks love CNN. They love to hate Don Lemon. They love to hate CNN. If it's not on CNN, it never happened to black people. So, therein lies a problem where we get our source of information from. And really, people need to start doing some more thinking and doing for self. But that's another story. But, yeah, the black church did not make any type of definitive statement. White folks will talk about Cecil the Lion or Cecil the Lion. We can talk about everything and anything else but black lives really mattering. And when you try to have a serious discussion about the plight of black folks in this republic, people turn it down real fast. They get real distracted. And black folks fall for the old okie doke as well. Because they get into that blame the victim mentality. They keep on talking about black on black crime. And it's sad that I understand what that is really about than a lot of so-called elders do. It's not about black on black crime. It's a system that produces and manufactures hate through programming. It has nothing to do with black folks committing crimes against each other. You kill where you live. If you go to Italy, who's killing Italians? If you go to China, who's robbing the Chinese? A lot of times crimes are committed by people that you know or are aware of that live closest to you. So it has nothing to do with, black on black crime. And black folks are held to this high, ridiculous moral standard when the people that we're trying to be vindicated and validated by, they have no such squabbles or qualms about being morally incorrect, about not having moral standards or moral code, ethics. But they do have a code of ethics among themselves. But when it comes to dealing with black folks, from a justice point of view, there are no morals. There are no ethics. It's all about pulling out the paycheck. It's all about giving people hush money. For example, I look at the fact that the cop that killed Brother Sam DuBose up in Cincinnati, even though he was indicted, he didn't spend no time in jail. His father was able to raise the 10% for that $1 million bail to get his son out of jail. You had folks, they reported on different news outlets, and like, I don't trust everything I read or see or hear, but they said, but you just based upon the fact with Darren Wilson and other white supremacists, race soldiers, the fact that they was able to raise money for these people while even knowing the full facts of the story within hours. So you had Ray Tensinger, I don't care what his name called, the Queen City killer cop, or cop flunky who couldn't make the cut, couldn't make the grade. So he ended up becoming a university cop, a university killer cop. He was able to get out of jail, and he had $1 million bond set. And they were able to get their money together and get him out of jail. We had Sandra Bland spend 3 days in jail on a 5,000 suspect bond. Of course, she didn't deserve that because she didn't assault Brian Ensenia. She did not assault him. He assaulted her. He violated her. But, you know, she was in jail for 3 days with nobody checking in on her, really. I don't care what nobody said. That's going to haunt the family for the rest of their days. No matter how many millions of dollars and all this stuff they get, they could never bring back Sandra Bland because she was down there by herself for 3 days. And I keep on telling people, she went to Paraview A&M class of 2008 with sorority sisters, fellow graduates. I know everybody didn't leave Texas. Even the brother got on TV that released the voicemail. Man, like, I remember when you put old people in retirement homes or loved ones or elders in retirement homes, even the people in the retirement home tell you, look, check in on these people every day. Because if they see you not checking in on your people, they could treat them or we could treat them any type of way and get away with it because you're not checking in on your people. So this sister was by herself for 3 days. And that's because people there don't mean, you know, she's not alone. You can have a lot of people with you in the room. I've been in rooms with a lot of people. I still feel alone. I still feel alone now, to be honest with you. But what I'm saying is, white folks are able to rally without any problems getting their people out of jail, getting their people proper legal defense representation. And we struggle because we always say, well, if she talked a certain way, it's a body language. If he didn't steal debt, if he didn't have poor credit rating, if he paid his child support, if she didn't smoke weed, it doesn't make a difference what a person did or did not do in the past. Your life should not be subjugated to that type of standard. If white folks don't give a damn about you, you should at least give a damn about yourself and your own people. And so I said to the black church, I say to the black church, where the hell are you? 9 black folks died on June 17th at a church. Sandra Bland was assaulted and arrested outside a black church. Darius Stewart in Memphis was killed on the property of a black church. Almost 10 black churches burned down, as we know, in the South, all in the span of 1 month. June 17th, Mother Emmanuel 9. July the 17th, Brother Darius Stewart. That's just 1 month, people. In 1 month, all that destruction and so much silence is deafening. But this is nothing new to black people. You know, I was down in Charleston on July the 4th of this year. I was interviewing people at Mother Emmanuel AME at the scene of a crime. It turned into a big time tourist attraction. And what struck me as I was taking it all in, because it's a beautiful church. Charleston is beautiful and historic. It got a lot of history to it. It's one of those big small towns. Not that big, but it's big enough. It's not that small, but it's intimate enough that everybody knows everybody. Over 100,000 mm-hmm. people. But looking at that church, I saw the edifice. And it has a sign built into the wall of the church, of the edifice. And it basically said, you know, this church was founded in 1818 by Morris Brown, Reverend Morris Brown. But there is no mention whatsoever of the man, known as Denmark Vesey, who allegedly planted an insurrection on the grounds of that church. And he was hanged with some of his co-conspirators, allegedly, on July the 2nd, 1822. When that news of what happened at Mud Emmanuel first broke out, for a couple of days, you didn't hear no mention of Denmark Vesey, even though the anniversary of his so-called planned insurrection happened around those dates of that part of June. And it took the black activists and black theologians I saw that came on TV to mention Denmark Vesey's name. The white media wouldn't touch that name. They still fear a black man that had been dead for almost 200 years. Why is that so? Well, I tell you about Charleston, although his name is not on the edifice of their historic church, they burnt that church down right after Denmark Vesey. The crackers burned the church down. Okay? And they had to go underground. But what I tell you about Charleston, which is interesting, there's a one-way street in Charleston with a big looming foreboding tree. It's called the Hanging Tree. Allegedly, that's the spot where they hang Denmark Vesey and some of his co-conspirators. There is no historical marker on that street. There's nothing showing the significance of that spot. But the white supremacists and the crackers made sure they preserve that spot so that Negroes and other folks that get out of line know their place. So this is how powerful the psychology is that they run on black people in this system. Because South Carolina is one of the scariest places I've been in terms of black people. Black folks are so afraid in South Carolina. They're so afraid in Charleston. But if you understand the history of South Carolina, if you understand that Charleston, over 40% of the enslaved Africans that came to this country came through Charleston Harbor. If you understand that you had black folks that owned slaves in that area, and they were, you know, die-hard Confederates, then you can understand what's going on in that type of the world, in that part of the world, Then you can understand the submissiveness and the passiveness and the quick to forgiveness of the situation. You won't be so disappointed. But my problem is this. Where is the black church? Where is the response? If you had a black church that produced the likes of Denmark Vesey, of a Gabriel Prosser, of a Nat Turner, of a Harriet Tubman, of a Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, where in the hell is the response from the black church? It reminds me when I came back from Selma, Alabama for the 50th this year, I made sure I stopped in Birmingham, Alabama to pay my respects at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham when the four little girls was killed. It's actually five little girls, but one survived, and that's another story in itself. But I remember it's a beautiful church. And I went through the basement, and they showed me the spot where the bomb went off. And then I went into the main area, the altar place and all this stuff. And it was fascinating because there was a stained glass window at 16th Street Baptist Church featuring a white Jesus. The blast was so powerful that it blew the face off that white Jesus. But the black folks couldn't wait to put another white Jesus up there. Another stained glass window of white Jesus. It took folks from England and Wales to raise money to create a stained glass black Jesus for them to have in their church. People from England knew they should have had a black Jesus up in their church. And they raised the money and got it done and shipped it to Birmingham. And then, it's in the church now. But my problem is, black folks, the only thing they really taught us was their religion. They didn't want to teach us how to read. They didn't want to teach no arithmetic or writing. Three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, as they say. But they taught us their religion. And the first slave ship that came to the New World was what? Was named what? The Good Ship Jesus. And a lot of us still on that ship to this day. And I'm not knocking religion at all. I mean, everybody believes in something. Whatever you believe is your religion. Whatever you love is your religion, to say the least. But if your religion does not teach you to believe in yourself,
does not teach you how to access your energy. I ain't say no energy. I ain't talking about E-N-E-R-G-Y. I'm talking about inner, like I-N-N-E-R, G, capital G. Your inner God, your energy. If your religion don't teach you that, because they teach you that you got a temple, that your body is your temple, but they don't tell you that the God that you need to seek resides in that temple. Because if you are made in the image of God, that means you got to access, well, you got access to God from within. You don't need a middleman to deal with your God. You need to deal with your God. And you need to be able to manifest your own reality. We do that every day. We manifest our own reality every day. You understand? Like, for example, you can knock down the projects. And you can move the folks that live in the projects into Beverly Hills. And that becomes the projects. It ain't where you're from. It's where you at. On a mental and spiritual sense. Like, Rocky, it ain't where you're from, it's where you at. Because not from where you're from, it's like how you thinking. Do you have a mind that's a poverty spirit? Do you possess a poverty mind? Do you possess a poverty spirit? If I don't change your mind, you can't change your spirit. Now, if you don't change your mind, you can't change your spirit. You can't change your reality. So what I'm saying is, prosperity preaching is really poverty pimping. Prosperity preaching is really poverty pimping. I had a chance back in 2008 to talk to Dr. James Accone. I hope I get his name right. He is the father of modern day black liberation theology. A brilliant brother. I reached out to him because I wanted to get his response to that famous speech that Barack Obama did when he was running for president, which basically threw Reverend Wright under the bus and the black prophetic tradition under the bus. And it was a brilliant tactical speech, very Machiavellian. He did what he had to do. That's why he's a two-term president. But talking to James Cone, I said, you know what? I asked him about prosperity preaching. I asked about what's going on with the black church. He said, well, Brother Ron, what the black church need to do is go back to its roots, to understand the reason why it was founded in the first place. And I agree. You know, years later, that's ringing true now more than ever. The black church need to go back to its roots. Why was the black church founded? Well, it was founded in response to white supremacy racism. Who was Richard Allen, one of the founders of the black church that we know of today? Look at his story. It's very fascinating. It's very inspiring. Because after the Mother Emanuel thing, I started looking up the history of the black church. Look at somebody like Richard Allen, who was born into slavery in Delaware back in 1760. He had four brothers and sisters and a mom. So it was five of them. But when he turned 17, his family was broken up because of the horror of slavery. He never saw his siblings or his mom again at the age of 17. But it was an itinerant Methodist preacher, I believe, who was a white man, used to be a former slave owner. He came through and started preaching the Bible. And Richard Allen had an epiphany. He thought, hey, this would be a ticket to my own liberation, to my own salvation. Not only for my salvation, but for my people's salvation. And so he got into that. You know, and then, you know, he moved to Philadelphia. Went to St. George's in Philadelphia. St. George's was a mixed racial congregation. Then one day, you know, when Absalom Jones and Richard Allen was trying to pray at the bottom of the church with the white folks wasn't having it, because actually they raised money to build a balcony section for the black people. They didn't want the black folks mixing in with the white folks anymore. And it was one day that Absalom Jones and Richard Allen and others were trying to pray, and the white folks said, you need to get the hell on and get up there where you belong. And Absalom Jones said, okay, we'll do that. Just let us finish praying. And they wouldn't let them finish praying. So a group of them, led by Richard Allen and Absalom Jones, walked out of the church. It's known as the Great Schism of 1787. And 1791, they was able to build one of the first AME churches. So what I'm saying all this to say is that we were forced to create our own world due to white supremacy racism, to create our own religion, and to you know, promote our own culture. But what I love about Richard Allen was, no matter how prominent he became in his life and the things he done, he made sure he never forgot about his people. You know, AME Church was used as havens for the Underground Railroad. You know, he was against slavery. He didn't kowtow to white supremacy. He spoke out against slavery. You know, he spoke out against it. And he used all his resources of his church, of his institution, to empower black folk. You know, when Morris Brown had to flee Charleston, where did he go? He went to Philadelphia, where Richard Allen then was at. They protected Morris Brown. You know, so what I'm saying is, we don't have that right now. We don't have any protection from our religion. Because even the most powerful religions, at the bottom of them is do for self. See, Judaism. At the bottom, Judaism is do for self. You do for self means you do for your people first. You invest in your community. Because when you believe in self, you can do for self, and you can do for other people when you do for self. You know, we got it backwards as black people. We're the biggest consumers in this matrix. We give it all away. We don't pay ourselves first. We give it all away. And then we wonder why we at where we at. We at where we at because we don't pull our resources. We don't do for us first. Everybody knows you got to pay yourself first if you want to be wealthy. If you want to be rich, you got to find a way to pay yourself first. Then you pay off the other stuff. But we don't have a high thought about ourselves. We don't think of ourselves highly as a collective, as a group. So we don't even have an identity, really. We got an identity crisis. And that's another thing. Lack of knowledge of self will lead to your destruction. They always say, my people perish because of lack of knowledge. And people think that means because I didn't know 2 + 2 = 4. No, my people perish because of lack of knowledge of self. Not knowing who you are. That's the foundation of your education. That's the foundation of your reality. That's the foundation of your culture. That's very important. We're not teaching that because we don't control our curriculum. Like when I hear black folks talking about, well, you know, the LGBTQ people, they're taking over the schools. They're forcing my kids to read this. They're forcing my kids to do this. But I'm going to tell you what Malcolm told us 50 years ago. Anybody that let the enemy be the primary educator of their children, they are fools. And I'm not just talking about that. I'm not pointing out, are you gay bashing? No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about there are people that do not take the time to develop the curriculum for their children, to create the institutions to help their children develop self-awareness and knowledge of self and self-respect and a code and an ethics. That's the people heading for self-destruction. It has nothing to do with the LGBTQ community. It has nothing to do with the white man. It's all to do with us. When you tell me that you need so many millions, so many hundreds of thousands to start a school, I laugh at you. Mary McLeod Bethune, who was born on July the 10th, 1875, one of 16 children in South Carolina, born in the hells of Reconstruction America. She started Bethune-Cookman, what is now known as Bethune-Cookman College, or university rather, with just $1.50. She just started that whole thing with $1.50 back in the early 1900s. If you say you got to adjust it for the cost of inflation, even if you adjust that for the cost of inflation, $1.50 ain't going to be $1.5 million. But yet she started that. She was able to acquire real estate, 20 acres of land down in Daytona Beach. Florida's was the top state for lynching for years. It was the top state for lynching. When we think about lynching, a lot of us think about Mississippi, Alabama, Texas. We don't think about Florida a lot of times. Some of the worst lynchings went down in Florida, using black babies as as alligator bait. She started that school. This was, you know, teaching girls, and then they expanded to co-ed. But she was able to stir down the Klan with just herself and her girl students. And they backed the hell off. Because when you know who you are, nobody can deny your inheritance. Because what is yours to have, you shall get if you claim it. And that's what the mistake that black folks are making with dealing with white supremacy. That is the mistake that we are making with dealing with cops, with the police. You don't come from a place of fear. Like people tell you, dogs and animals can sense fear. So can white supremacists. They can sense fear. You come from a place of strength. Strength has nothing to do with how much money you have in the bank, how many degrees you have on the wall. Strength has to do with your character. Strength has to do with knowledge of self. You deal with these people from a place of strength, they won't fuck with you like that. And what I mean, people say, well, run. Well, they try to kill. I said, if you're willing to die for what you believe in, God damn it, they can't kill all of us. Give me an army to die. Oh, it's rather, to paraphrase, the people's army. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself, I'm getting passionate. Give me an army that's willing to die. They could defeat any army on this planet. If you are an army that's willing to die for what you believe in, no one can defeat you. No matter what, they got rockets and missiles and tech. That don't mean shit. If you are willing to die, like Patrick Henry said, the famous revolutionary cracker, give me liberty or give me death. When people don't study history, going back to South Carolina, some of the most important wars in the American Revolutionary War were fought in South Carolina. Some of the most important turning points of the American Revolutionary War started in South Carolina. George Washington and the Continental Army lost more battles than they won, but they won the war. Let me repeat that once more. I'll do it slowly. George Washington and the Continental Army lost more battles than they won, but yet they won the war. How is that possible, Brother Ron? If you understand military science, sometimes a victory is worse than a defeat. Sometimes a victory is worse than a defeat. Because sometimes a victory can be too damn costly. Yes, the Redcoats won a lot of battles and skirmishes, but at what cost? You see what I'm saying? How many lives? Resources were lost. Think about that, y'all. And how many lives, how many black lives are being lost because a lot of us are afraid to die? You know, people always tell me I want to go to heaven, but they don't want to die. People always tell me, you know, to me, they're going to only kill you one time. You know, people tell me, well, you know, but you're dying every day when you have a spirit of a coward. And you set that example for your kids. When I heard a brother told me, I respect this brother dearly, and he's an older gentleman, and he's got a 13-year-old daughter. And he said he had a talk with his daughter. And he said he told his daughter that, you know, well, you know, there's some people in society that don't want you to have anything because of the way you look. And we deal with the police, just be quiet, just do this and that. Have a spirit of meekness. And what people don't understand, they always quote that Bible crap. Well, I mean, they always misquoting the Bible. They always say stuff like, oh, well, it relates to black people. They say, well, the last will be first, and the first will be last, to justify their cowardice. But we were the first. That's why we last now. Black people, we were the original people. That's why we last now. So you want to take it from a biblical point of view. So don't use a phrase like that to support your cowardice. Because a coward is a coward is a coward. You know, because everybody got to die one day. Nobody escapes that. The cops can't escape it. I'm in one of the most powerful places I've been to in my life was Arlington Cemetery. What the hell? All the dead presidents, all the dead Supreme Court justices, all the dead Medal of Honorees, all these folks had this quote-unquote power. It's the illusion of power. They don't have no goddamn power. They dead. If they had power, they would be dead. Anybody could get God. That's what I love about this life thing. Everybody has their day, and anybody can get God. Stop being afraid. It's our time, people. Our young folks are not afraid, but they have no knowledge of self. They are soldiers looking for generals to lead them, but the people that should be generals don't want to even claim the position. They want none of it. So they blame the troops for being unruly. They blame the troops for being disorganized. Well, goddamn it, I'll tell you right now, stop making these damn excuses, okay? Well, people say, well, we don't have the military training. I said, God damn it, don't you know how they formed the Continental Army? You know what Sam Adams and those guys did? They read books. They read books. They did things through trial and error. One of George Washington's most trusted generals, Nathaniel Greene, I think I'm saying his name right, he didn't go to no military school. He didn't go to a military academy. A brilliant mind. Even if you look at the number one white supremacist, the first Grand Wizard, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest. He didn't go to military academy. They still study what he did on horseback in military schools throughout the world. But like General Lee said, he was the best general they had. Like I think a historian Shelby Foote said, who's buried in Elmwood Cemetery in Memphis, he said there were two geniuses that came out of the Civil War. One was Abraham Lincoln. The other was General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Both men were basically self-learned men. They were self-directed learners. They learned through trial and error, observation, and interacting. Now, what they said, they were both white supremacists, too, as well. Yes, your beloved Lincoln, black people, was a white supremacist. Don't fool yourself. Stop drinking the Kool-Aid. But getting back, where is the black church? Where is the black church in response to the terror that we are witnessing among black people right now? There's been a strong attack of the black church over 8 months' time, and still no word from the black church. But it does not surprise me. If you look at the history, for example, let's go back to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I love using his example. I recently went to Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. And we're coming upon the 60th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott, which started when Rosa Parks refused to remove from her seat on the Montgomery bus back on December 1st, 1955. Mm-hmm. The boycott lasted for 381 straight days. Yes, boys and girls, scholars and laymen, the boycott lasted for 381 straight days. 381 straight days, y'all. Black folks were willing to work it out for 381 straight days. And what people don't understand about the civil rights movement, it was really about the black liberation and the black family movement. Because, you know, and I'm keep on repeating this because people don't want to talk about this. They talk about Bill Cosby and shit like that. But 60 years ago, you had a situation in Alabama, especially Montgomery. We had a white man in positions of power on the Montgomery police force or in the bus drive. They were raping black women. They were raping black women. It was a case that Rosa Parks investigated that dealt with a black woman being gang raped by some white men coming home from church. This sister was coming home from church and she was raped by some white men, six white men coming home from church. And she just recently got an apology from the state of Alabama. This happened within several years ago. She got an apology from the state of Alabama for the gang rape because everybody knew who raped her. Everybody knew. And they never, I think they went to court. Don't mistake me, but you can look this up. I think it went to court and they got off. But six white men raped her coming home from church. And Rosa Parks was told to investigate that. She was the secretary for the NAACP, and she investigated it. So Rosa Parks was nobody. I was sick and tired of being tired. She was actually a person that was a trained activist and revolutionary. You understand? She was a revolutionary. And she seized that moment. But yeah, other black folks like Claudette Colvin and other black people, men and women, who refused to remove from themselves, who refused to be removed off the bus. Okay? But they chose her. Because it's strategy. You know, for different reasons why they chose Sister Rosa Parks. But her grandfather was a staunch Garveyite. He was a staunch follower of Marcus Garvey. So she grew up with black pride and knowledge of self and self-respect. That started in the home. Even in places like Alabama. You know, people always say, well, they were so racist and stuff. I remember, I ain't gonna never forget, about maybe 10 years ago, I was at a Greyhound bus station in Memphis. And I was sitting next to this sister from Alabama, and she talked about how her father owned this very prosperous grocery store in the country part of Alabama. And she told me some of his biggest customers were white people. You know, in a time where white folks were hanging black folks, putting crosses in people's yards and blowing up churches, some of his biggest customers were white people. They supported his grocery store. And I never forgot that, because there's a saying, as they say, in the South you can get close but don't get too big. In the North you can get big but don't get too close. I hope I said it right. In the South, you can get close but don't get too big. But in the North, you can get big but don't get too close. That's the rules for black folks. That's how they ran it down. But anyway, it's always these misconceptions, because a lot of places up North, some of the worst racism, and to this day, could be experienced in northern cities like Cleveland and St. Louis and even New York City. There's certain places that black folks should not want to go. Like Howard Beach had that thing with Yusuf Hawkins back in the day. So I'm going way back for a lot of black folks. You talking about Eric Garner up in Staten Island. This guy was selling Lucy's cigarettes. The biggest criminals in Staten Island got the biggest houses. They called the mob. A lot of gangsters live in Staten Island. I'm talking like Gambino, Genovese, all them type of degenerates. They live in Staten Island in million-dollar homes. So those the biggest criminals in Staten Island. They ain't going to jail. So I digress. And I talk about Dr. King, and I remember Daddy King reading that Daddy King was sent by other black ministers to bring his son from Montgomery, from Dexter, when he was leading the Montgomery bus boycott, back to Atlanta to put a leash on him. And Dr. King refused. And years later, Daddy King was proud that his son refused him. But a lot of Dr. King's enemies were black ministers. There were places in Alabama at churches that he couldn't even preach from the pulpit. They would not even allow him to preach from the pulpit. And man, I believe Tavis Brown said like 12 churches in Alabama would not even allow him to speak at the pulpit. He called a meeting of ministers back in 1967 in Virginia. I think he called a meeting for over 100 ministers to meet with him to help him plan the poor people campaign. And guess how many ministers showed up? Zero. Zero ministers showed up. Read his letter from a Birmingham jail. Dr. King did not have no problem with the working class man and woman and child, the everyday black folk. His problem was with the black clergy. Read his letter from a Birmingham jail. That was addressed to the black clergy. That's why they had to form the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, because of the pushback he was getting from the black church, from the black leaders in the black church. I remember seeing Reverend Jeremiah Wright on April the 3rd, 2009 at the University of Memphis. And they had the president was visiting. He had so many death threats and whatnot. And they had all this high-tech security. But anyway, he said, this is on the eve of the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. He said, when Dr. King got hit in Memphis, you had black ministers in Chicago celebrating with their congregation. They was like, oh, yeah, we glad that nigga dead. Even down in Memphis, you had some ministers, you know, the truth will come out. The truth is already out there. You had some ministers that were said to betray Dr. King and had him set up for assassination. In Memphis, they could do it in Memphis because they couldn't do it anywhere else. Memphis is an interesting place. But Dr. King had all this going against him with his own peers. Like he spoke out against United States on Vietnam, April 4th, 1967, at Riverside Church up in New York City. He was dead in Memphis, April 4th, 1968. You do the math. You figure it out. Because white folks love numerology and numbers and dates when it comes to this white supremacy killing stuff. They all into it. But I give you all that. I digress. So if Dr. King could not get the help from the black church, what make you think that the black church will say anything now? And to quote the words of Dr. King, I'm going to get it right. And I see I got the phone lines lit up. I got you all. Just I'm going to get you in here. I just want to get this quote out. I think it's very important. Because you ain't getting this from no CNN. You getting this from Ron Hurd and We All Be. The CNN are important about this. The Unlimited, Roland Martin, while I do respect, none of them talking about this. And I believe he's a minister. His wife a minister too, I believe. Dr. King said this: in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Once again, let me say that. In the end, We will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Black church, where are you? Where in the hell is the black church? It's a genocide of your people. It's like we're going back. This is like the Nazi. This is the Fourth Reich. This is the Fourth Reich. This is the Jews. We are the Jews that are in denial about Hitler and the Nazis. This is what's going on with black folks in 2015. Black folks are in denial. We're coming upon the 10th anniversary of Hurricane FEMA, Katrina, white supremacy. I remember back in 2005, we didn't have no Twitter, and Facebook wasn't populous at that time. People talking about Katrina fatigue. They're calling black folks that lived their entire lives in Knife Ward, New Orleans, refugees. They never left the city. They never left the state. And you call them refugees? And I remember when some white folks were getting upset, like they got upset about Cecil the Lion. They'll get, oh, right, like Brian Williams. Lion Brian Williams. He got upset. He had, you know, those got even kind of crooked, even more. There's a lot of race. You call them refugees? You ain't citizens. They should be calling you Dred Scott. We all Dred Scotts. We not citizens. We're Dred Scott. They told black folks what we were when they told Dred Scott what he was. You ain't no citizen. Because you get no protection from the government. Zimbabwe got more protection for Cecil the Lion than you do from President Obama. Robert Mugabe got more laws to protect lions than Obama has to protect black people. And I'm not just singling out Obama. It's bigger than Obama. But he represents, he's the manager at the white supremacist Burger King, which is America, okay? So this is what I'm saying. People, wake the hell up. We the Jews in 1930-something. We the ones in denial about the prison industry deathplex. The prison industry deathplex. We're in denial about that stuff. Because we ain't hearing it from CNN or Anderson Cooper or whoever. Black folks got to stop with this silly shit, okay? Stop with the silly shit. They're killing our people left and right. And no organization is really addressing that because they all own that FBI money, that faith-based initiative money. That's why the black church has been brought out. That's the biggest COINTELPRO operation as far as I'm concerned, the faith-based initiative. They've been bought out with hush money. T.D. Jakes is in Texas. T.D. Jakes is a gifted minister. He's a gifted communicator. He has made millions off of black people in religion. And yet, I haven't heard a word from Bishop T.D. Jakes about what happened in his own backyard of Texas down in Prairie View. And I said a mumbling word. Not one thing. So this is something that we got to think about. That's why it's important to support platforms like this. It's not just for me. It's like it's a way for me to help other folks who don't have their voice heard by the mainstream corporate KKKK media. I remember my late friend, Judge D. Army Bailey, who was the founder of the National Civil Rights Museum, civil rights activist extraordinaire. I interviewed him a couple of times. I was blessed to be his friend as well. He told me something like this. He said, Ron, we must learn how to amplify. We must amplify our struggles. We must amplify our story, Ron. We must amplify. We must amplify and amplify and amplify. It's like what Frederick Douglass said. You must agitate, agitate, agitate. Judge Bailey told me, amplify, amplify, amplify. Okay? And black folks are so damn quiet. We loud about everything else. We loud about our McDonald's, about our Popeyes, about Meek Mill and Drake. We lied about everything, and all the things we lied about don't really matter in the big scheme of things. And the things we should be concerned about, like our education, like our protection, like reparations, we don't have a word to say about it. And we always blame ourselves for why things don't turn out. You can never win with a victim mindset in a system of white supremacy. You will never win. You can't be a victim in white supremacy. You must try to find a way to be a victor. And you must do it on your own terms. But once again, go back. You must come from a position of strength. Because I've been pulled over by police a lot of times. Even in Texas, I've been pulled over by the police. On U.S. Highway 59, going back from Houston to Memphis. 2 years ago, I was pulled over by a state trooper. I did the same thing Cedric Blaine did. I was trying to get out of his way. I was in the left lane, and he came behind me on my tail, and I got to the right lane. And he followed me onto the right lane, got to the left. Yeah, and, I got, and then he pulled on his lights, his trap, and I pulled over. He came to my car, asked me where I was coming from. He was like, basically like a kid. He was Latino. Like he barely fit his suit, you know, small dude, young guy in his early 20s. And he asked me where I was coming from because I come from Houston to visit my folks. Then, you know, I was kind of irritated, but I'm like, it takes a lot to get me really angry and shit. I ain't gonna let no cop fuck up my day. So he told me to get the car. I got the car. You know, you don't have to get your car, but I got the car. Shit. Because I knew who I was. I wasn't coming from a place of fear. I came from a place of strength. And he asked me, and a lot of times you don't have to tell them where the fuck you come from, where you going, it's none of their business. But I just volunteer the information because I try to make it as sweet, as short as possible. Like Sonny Hostin said, make it as sweet and as short as possible. So I did all that. I told him, hey, I got a nonprofit that I run and own. I'm working on my doctorate, yada, yada, yada. And he said, well, you know, this corridor of 59 is known for a lot of high level of drug trafficking. But I don't care. He's not searching my car. So, he gave me a warning. This is bullshit. He was profiling me. I even had my turn signals on. So, it was no good reason why to pull me over. But he was just trying to profile me. He was trying to get something out of me. And what we got to learn as black folks is that we can't be afraid to deal with these people. They nobodies. They hide behind authority. They hide behind a badge and a gun. A false sense of power. Like I told you, one of the most powerful places I've been to was a cemetery. Was the Arlington Cemetery. And now them motherfuckers dead. They can't do shit to me. I'm stepping on their graves. I'm spitting on the grass. Not trying to spit on anybody. You know, I'm just saying. You know, they worm food. These guys should be U.S. presidents and general, four-star generals and, you know, all this stuff. They worm food. They can't do anything to you. Yet we fear the dead. Because like I told you about in Charleston, they fear Denmark Vesey. They can't mention his name. White supremacists can't mention his name. They fear him. Say his name. Say her name. Say anybody's name that goes up against white supremacy. Because you cannot kill energy. You cannot kill their spirit. And they always kept alive. And they always stay relevant when we say their names. We must say the names of the ancestors. We must say their names. Because the black church ain't saying their names. You understand? This is Black August. This is Black History Month. This is the month of revolution and the birth month of revolutionaries. Whether they be Marcus Garvey,
Louis Armstrong,
Charlie Parker, Michael Jackson, Fred Hampton Sr., insurrections, baby. This is Black History Month. This is Jonathan Jackson. This is Soledad brother George Jackson. This is our month when it's hot outside where we could barbecue. We burn some shit up more ways than one. This is our month. And people always sleep on the fact. We didn't get all that shit. Now, you saw that movie, Selma. They have you believe that we got everything we got from ass whoopings and singing songs. We got a lot of the shit we got from burning shit down. Because they said, what's wrong with these niggas? Or Nagaras or whatever. Let's give them some shit. Power can seize nothing without a demand. Power don't give a fuck if you beg. Power does not give a fuck if you ask nicely, but it does not concede nothing without a demand. You must demand, in order to demand anything in this system, you must come from a position of strength and know who the hell you are and know who you're dealing with. Because white folks, all they understand is the language of military science and money. They don't understand no sympathy. They don't understand no compassion. They don't understand no logic when it comes to dealing with black people. They don't give a damn about your facts, your nonfiction, because they deal in propaganda. They deal in mythology. They deal in fantasy, and they make that shit real. Because they got things like Hollywood. They got things like book publishers. They got things like documentary film. They got shit. They got propaganda. We must be in the business of propaganda. There's nothing wrong with propaganda. Malcolm X. I don't never stop saying this because you understand this. Malcolm X, the greatest gift he gave black people was to let us know that the media is the most powerful entity on the planet. Because it's about perception. It's not about your reality. It's about the perception. If I make you believe that your good friend is a crook or criminal, I did my job. It's the same thing with Bill Cosby. If y'all believe all that shit, to me, I'm going to tell you like this. The shit that he trying to pin on Bill Cosby is like Negro League style. Like Negro League stats. You know about the Negro Leagues? They don't count. Oh, you playing the Negro Leagues? Who gives a fuck? We ain't going to count your stats. So that's how I look at some of these rape allegations. They're too damn old. They don't count. Bill Cosby is not the biggest rapist, alleged rapist that America ever produced. If he was, he would have a holiday. Like Thanksgiving. Like Columbus Day. Like 4th of July. Some of the biggest rapists that we ever produced, I celebrated on the 4th of July. I celebrated on Columbus Day. I celebrated on Thanksgiving. Okay? That is the reality of the situation. So, that's what we're dealing with. So, this is why I do what I do. This is why I do what I do. And people always talk about, well, Dick Gregory and Paul Mooney. Damn, think for yourself. They old. I mean, I'm not out of disrespect. Paul Mooney will be 73 on August the 4th.
The same day as Louis Armstrong.
He'd be 73. And I just told you he had dementia. That was his folks said. So, and you look at Dick Gregory, Baba will be 83 on October 12th of this year. There's nothing wrong with respecting the elders and what they got to say, but think for yourself. The main thing of Dick Gregory is to force you to do your own research, to make you think for yourself. He's a thought provocateur like I am. To me, my job is not to think for you. My job is just to throw some stuff out there and see what sticks, like spaghetti. Like you throwing spaghetti on the wall. I'm going to throw it and see if it's done. I'm going to throw that shit in the wall. If it sticks, it's done. Okay? That's how I look at what I do. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, if something happened to me, God forbid, I'm not worried about it. They can't kill me. I'm too big to be killed by trash bags. That trash line and shit ain't going to work with me because I did professional cleaning. I know about cleaning offices and I know what trash liners are. And that shit ain't going to work on nobody like me. I'm too big for that shit. So they said I got tired from a trash liner and I hanged myself. You know it's a goddamn lie. I'm not gonna kill myself. That's the whole point. And I got a trail I'm leaving with these podcasts, these videos, with these books. I'm gonna be more dangerous dead than alive. That's what we all should be aiming towards as black people. Cause we all gotta die one day, but we should be more dangerous dead than alive. It's like Demarvis is more dangerous dead than alive. That's why white folks could not mention his name during the Mother Emmanuel 9 coverage. They would not mention his name. Because he's more dangerous dead than alive. Malcolm is still dangerous. That's why they're trying to co-opt his image. They're trying to sanitize and milk it down. It's like they did Dr. King. Dr. King never spoke out against a riot. He said that rioting is the language of the unheard. Dr. King never spoke out against rioting. Rioting is the reason why black folks got any gangs in the 60s. Dr. King got killed. The day he got killed was the day he had no protection from guns. The day that Dr. King was killed in Memphis was the day that he had no type of gun protection. Stop believing all that nonviolent shit. That shit will get you killed. There's a book out about that. Black folks fought back. All of us are here because we had people that fought back. I lost a dear friend of mine, Sister Margaret Block, the mother of Sister Michelle. Sister Margaret Block, who is the sister of Sam Block. They are both legendary freedom fighters from Mississippi. I interviewed Sister Michelle recently during the repast after her mom's funeral program. And she told me how her mom was helping her learn how to make Molotov cocktails at the age of 4. Like they were fighting anonymously. They had gotten in shootouts with the sheriffs and the Klans. They were making Molotov cocktails. They was on some gangster stuff. Stokely Carmichael, all them guys, they were down there putting in that work. They were just talking about, we shall overcome and, you know, all this other stuff, we forgive them. No, they was in war. They was at war. Black folks was fighting back. It's like in North Carolina, Robert F. Williams. He fought back. They was shooting out with the Klan. They was fighting back. It was a black man down in Mississippi, I believe, back in the early 20s named Joe Pullen. He got into a shootout with the Klan and local law enforcement. And became a folk hero. See, we don't know about people like that. We're afraid to talk about Joe Pullen. Or even the Howard Johnson shooter down in New Orleans. This is back in the 70s. Look up the Hojo shooter. It's a brother from Kansas who used to be in the Navy. He got, you know, he said the Navy was racist as hell, got out of it. He started killing police down there in New Orleans for several days at the beginning of the new year. They thought they had to bring in a helicopter with a machine gun to kill this brother. And they basically splattered his body through on top of the hotel. But this brother took on SWAT teams. I'm talking about he took on the police SWAT team and the military for several days, killing police down in New Orleans in response to the police terror waged against the Black Panthers and the black community down in New Orleans. This guy took it upon himself to do that. And them white folks swore there had to be more than one person doing all that shooting and killing. Look up the Hojo, the Howard Johnson shooter, New Orleans. Look that stuff up. They try to suppress that stuff. I'm not saying I endorse it, but I want you to know that black folks fought back. Everybody just didn't take that shit. My grandfather's from Greenville, South Carolina. My great-grandfather on my maternal great-grandfather. Not my maternal, I mean my paternal. Well, anyway, my paternal grandma, father, I'm just getting to, my paternal grandma, her father is from Greenville, South Carolina. He shot and killed a white man for disrespecting his black woman, my great-grandmother, because he kept his bull by the property line. She had she hang her clothes by the property line. And every time my great-grandma would go outside and hang her clothes and take them down, the bull would charge at her. And my great-grandfather told the white man, look, can you please move your bull away from the property line? You're threatening the life of my woman. And the white man said, go fuck yourself, nigga. And my great-grandfather went to the white man's home and shot his ass and killed him. He had to leave. He ended up leaving Greenville, South Carolina. He stopped in Joplin, Missouri, and ended up settling in Kansas City, Kansas. Had to change his last name from Perrette to French. You know, and he had 10 kids, including my grandma, who was the youngest. But had he not did that, I wouldn't be here right now doing this podcast. So everybody can't say we all got to just... You know, I heard Don Lemon about a week ago talking about we just got to give in. We just got to do what they tell you to do. I'm not going to do what they tell me to do. I'm not going to... They tell me you got to kill your grandma and screw your sister. I'm not going to do that because they police. Get the hell out of here with that shit. If it's my time to go, I'm going to take something with me. That's how I look at it. It's like Ida B. Wells said. Ida B. Wells was a short sister, about 5 feet tall, but she carried around 2 guns on her all the time. Because she was saying, if I got to go, some of them going to go too. I'm not going by myself. So what I'm saying is, black folks, if they're killing you, don't make it so easy for them to take your life. You know, fight for your life. You know, fight for your life. Because police officers are not the moral authorities. Police officers are some of the worst people to marry. I mean, according to like they domestic violence, if you look at the stats and records, they all try to look at stats and stuff on black people. Look at the stats on police officers and divorce rates and domestic violence. And you supposed to be respecting them when they don't respect you. They only respect their marriage, a lot of them. So what I'm saying is, stop being a fool. Learn who you are. Build that up. Build a narrative on who you are and where you come from. It's like what Ralph Ellison said, The Invisible Man. Don't let them make you the marginal character in your own story. Don't let them make you the invisible character in your own story. That's why I'm telling you, black folks, tell your story. The lion is now, this is the season of the lion to tell his tale. The Cecil the Lion thing, that's some symbolic spiritual shit. It's time for the lion and lioness to stand up and tell their tale. It's time for us to roar. This is a time for not for us to be the timid, cowardly lion on Wizard of Oz. We've been too long the timid, cowardly lion from the Wizard of Oz. It's time for us to get some goddamn courage. Understand? It's time for us to roar. Roar, black people, roar. Roar, young man, roar. You know, it's roar, 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 rah, rah, rah. Okay? We get all hyped up. Got niggas talking about from NFL. I'm going to get them out on NFL. I like football, but shit, I don't love football. I like it. You know, if he had a choice between reparations and looking at the NFL, getting free, you know, direct TV access to all the NFL games, and they said, I give you reparations instead, which one you want? I'm going to pick reparations. You know? And one thing we mess up is black people. We keep on saying that we need everybody. We don't need everybody. We just need ourselves. We need to become unified on something. And you don't need all black people to be unified. You just need some black folks to be unified. Because when we come together on anything, that shifts paradigms. That shifts paradigms. That changes worlds. that changes worlds. Because when we come unified on anything, we can get things done. This system runs on divide and conquer. This system is all about divide and conquer. That's all this system is based upon. It's not based on the power of the people. It's based on taking power out of the people. And we got to stop begging to be included in a system and a culture of death. We're paying taxes into a system that is built around death and destruction and divisiveness. That's not who we are, black people. We got to get back to our natural selves. Not just changing your hair, not just, you know, all this, but getting back to who the essence of who we were. Like Dr. Cone said, Ron, what was the reason why the black church was founded? That's what we need to get back to as black people. We need to become that village again. And also, we need to stop begging white folks to do things that we won't do ourselves. So when I hear young people say they won't give us this and they won't do that, I said, are you willing to do that? Are you willing to give yourself that? We got to start giving ourselves the things we need and stop trying to wait for everybody else to do it for us. It's not going to come. You know, and people say, well, we got some good white people. And I don't hear the good white people, the good cop argument no more. It's not enough good cops. It's not enough good white people. Because white supremacy still exists. Because police brutality still exists. So there's not enough good white people because we're still dealing with racism, white supremacy. There's not enough good cops or police because we're still dealing with police brutality. So that's my argument. I don't want to hear that because that's a spirit of fear. That's a fearful person. And when the revolution comes, you're going to be your own worst enemy because you're going to be dead. I remember my grandfather, my mom's father, who passed away August 12, 2005, with my dearest friends. He told me he was involved in D-Day, and he was a member of the Red Ball Express. That's the famous Red Ball Express that delivered the supplies for Patton's Army, as Obama always said, Patton's Army. My grandfather served in Patton's Army. Well, my grandfather served as the supply truck driver for Patton's Army. You know, I'm sorry. But anyway, he told me right before they was going to go into Normandy, their commander told them, look, when you hit that beach, keep moving forward. Don't run backwards. And it's like, that's crazy, right? He tell you no matter how much enemy fire you take, keep on going forward. Go towards the enemy fire. Don't run away from it. You want to know why? Because when you run away from it, you're more exposed. Then going, you got a better chance of survival heading towards the danger than running away from the danger. And black folks, we spend so much time trying to run away from the danger, and yet we're still being killed, like in the scary movies. We the first to die in the scary movies. And the white folks got a better chance of surviving, even though they stupid as hell. They got a better chance of surviving because they go towards the danger. What's that sound? Let's investigate, Becky. Black folks, oh, hey, we'll go fishing. Hey. And Becky or Tim might not survive, or maybe one of them might survive. But we already know the black dude getting killed. We already know the black girl getting killed. So what I'm saying, I don't know. So sometimes black folks, we got to run towards the danger. And I can still remember the night I did a show when Troy Davis was killed by the state. And we had Obama in the office. You know, Jimmy Carter, he got a conscience a little bit. He said it wasn't right. But when I saw those black police officers celebrating, no, they had their sirens on. They was going in a circle. And the black folks singing, "We Shall Overcome," and having prayer vigils. Now, we should have had a black liberation army down there to break out that brother. He was not. There's a lot of reasonable doubt. He should not even been in death. We should have broken him out like we did a shot of Shakur. Mumia Abdul-Jabbar should not be in jail right now. This is an indictment on black people and our cowardice. That people like Mumia Abdul-Jabbar is in jail. That people like Sister Aisha Shakur cannot come back to this country without fear of arrest. This is an indictment against black people. This is a judgment against black people. And I'm telling Memphis right now, Darius Stewart is the Mike Brown of Memphis. And this is how lethargic and out of it black folks are in Memphis. Black folks was out of it when Dr. King was here. That's why Dr. King got killed here. Because black folks are so easy to control in Memphis. They're very passive. I went down there to Forest Park for the rally for Nathan Bedford Forrest. 700 white folks down there. Less than 5 black folks, including myself, down there. And the white folks had the damn nerve to ask me, was I afraid? You're not afraid. You hear? I said, I pay taxes in this city. You just visited. This is my city. This is my property. I own this statue. I pay taxes here. You don't own nothing. And if it's about heritage and not hate, to be honest with you, the Confederate flag and all this stuff, I'm not bothered by it, but it has no place in government. It needs to be taken down. And I want to challenge the white folks who believe that we should have these as monuments and stuff like that. Why don't you subsidize it? Why don't y'all let the sons of Confederate veterans pay for the upkeep of General Nathan Bedford Forrest's final resting place and his $5 million statue? Stop telling them black folks to pay for it. But black folks are so complacent. We so in denial about everything. We always blaming ourselves. We want to say everything's about black on black crime. What about white on white crime? White on white crime causes world wars, damn it. White on white crime causes economic depressions. White on white crime causes natural disasters. Everywhere they go, they cause hell. Everywhere they go. This is not me saying it. This is what history tells us. This is what the news tells us. This is what reality is telling us. White folks cause havoc. You wanna know why they cause them havoc? It's because they're dying. It's they're dying because that's why they're attacking Planned Parenthood. It's too many white babies dying. Because Planned Parenthood was a plan of genocide against black people. Margaret Sanger used to have meetings with the Klan. The Klan used to host Margaret Sanger. She's like Margaret Sanger and what's her name? Susan B. Anthony. These were white supremacists. So-called feminist white supremacists. They ain't care nothing about no black women. And a lot of our sisters are so fooled by this bullshit. It's like, well, black people and Bill Clinton. I like Jackson cookies. I had Jackson cookies. They're the best cookies. Oh, he loves Jackson cookies. He loves black people. If he loved us so much, he wouldn't put so many of us in jail. He wouldn't help with the privatization of prisons. Or the tough on crime bill, which was tough on black asses bill. I call it the tough on black asses bill, the 94 crime bill. You destroyed generations. You destroyed the black family. Y'all gonna vote for his wife? And now they over Haiti? They occupy Haiti? You talking about some Papa Doc shit? Come on. It's like some King Leopold shit right there. I'm just saying. Ron, what you saying? I don't know, man. Do the research. Take a look. Is that all, Buck? That's what I'm saying. We got the internet now. Do some research on Bill Clinton and Hillary. I'm not saying they're the only ones. Franklin Roosevelt, his grandfather was one of the biggest drug dealers of all time. Warren Delano Jr. He sold opium to the Chinese. He made a lot of money off the opium wars. A lot of people would say, well, Roosevelt, the reason why he got into World War II was so he could get back control of the Golden Triangle. He wanted his family to control the drug trade once again. That's one of the theories about Franklin Roosevelt's involvement in World War II. But his grandfather made the family fortune selling opium. John Kerry's grandfather made the family fortune selling opium. I'm not lying to y'all. Y'all look this shit up. Franklin Roosevelt was a cokehead. He used to do coke. Cocaine was his drug. So anyway, man, it's so much to think about here, people. I mean, it's information overload. But once again, you had a terrorism. And I mean, that's not fail to mention the four Confederate flags that were placed at Ebenezer Church down in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, the home of the King family, where the King family made their mark on history. So that was that about heritage or was this about hate? Because really, America does have a heritage of hate. I mean, the old glory. United States flag is a Confederate flag. It's a Nazi flag. The Nazis learned how to do what they do from America. And actually, they were financed by American businessmen and foundations to do what they did over in Europe. So all this could be looked up. And people said, are you afraid? I said, you can't do shit to me. You know, once you put the information out there, it's out there. And what a lot of people got to understand is, nothing, there's no such thing as an unsolved mystery. Because really, all these mysteries could be solved. And they always put the truth out there, but they mix it up with bullshit. Because people always ask, how did so-and-so stay alive? They stay alive because they tell 10% truth and 90% bullshit. I ain't gonna mention their names, but they know who they are. They can stay alive because they can tell you 10% truth and it mixes with 90% bullshit. It's like the news. 10% truth, 90% bullshit. All this stuff is based on your emotions. Like, you look at CNN, they do shit like Dylan Roof. They said, well, he was a white supremacist, right? Well, can you just call him evil? This was an evil act. Or that's a good person. That's a bad person. That's a terrible person. Well, I say this, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And America trained out her own terrorists. ISIS is an invention of America, just like Al-Qaeda was, just like Bin Laden. The guy who played Pearl Harbor, Admiral Yamamoto, he went to Harvard University up in Boston. He actually was the guest of the state. And we taught him how to fly airplanes. Remember September 11th? Who taught them how to fly the airplanes? I just told you that we taught the master planner of Pearl Harbor how to fly airplanes in America. We gave him a college education in America. Okay? Ho Chi Minh, he used to come to America all the time to listen to Marcus Garvey speak in Harlem. He used to go to Chicago, talk to some of the black folks. No, he was at the University of Chicago. That's Ho Chi Minh. He based the Declaration of Independence for Vietnam off the Declaration of Independence of America. He told Woodrow Wilson, can you intervene on our behalf? We just like you all. We want to be like America, free, independent. He approached him back in 1919 at the end of World War I, and Woodrow Wilson wasn't heeded. But Ho Chi Minh, he got his ideas from listening to Marcus Garvey. And Marcus Garvey, black folks don't understand, Marcus Garvey had an army. It was called the African Legion. That's why the Klan respected Marcus Garvey. They was willing to give him money for his Back to Africa venture. Because he came from a position of strength and power. And that what made white folks afraid. And by the taking down of Marcus Garvey was the reason why we got the FBI. Because the FBI was founded to take down Marcus Garvey. You know, the first black agent in history of the FBI, Agent 800, was hired to infiltrate the Marcus Garvey organization. Now, that's a movie waiting to be made. I'd love to be a part of that. They have to make that a movie. Because, you know, people out talking about COINTELPRO, the Black Panthers and Dr. King, that was happening back in the late teens and early 20s with Marcus Garvey. You know, it's a story. A. Philip Randolph was the first person to invite Marcus Garvey to speak in America. And A. Philip Randolph was part of the black leadership that undermined and destroyed the Marcus Garvey leadership. Father, please forgive them for they know not what they do type of thing. And it's a story that A. Philip Randolph got a severed white person's hand in the mail. And people say it was the African Legion that sent it to him and said, you need to stay your ass away. And they scared the shit out of him. But the African Legion was doing fights with the Klan in the South. Like I said, black folks was not just taking it. Before every black person they killed, they were killing some white people. You know, I talk about Joe Pullen, the guy from Mississippi, the guy in the shootout with the law enforcement and Klan back in Mississippi. We learned about his story in the Negro World in the Marcus Garvey paper for the UNIA. They talk about his story. And I think he was a Garveyite. Yeah, you had black folks that fought back, you know. Yeah, black folks that fought back. Make no mistake about that. So don't let them get you with this nonviolent stuff, because I couldn't be nonviolent if I saw somebody ripping my wife and doing something to my kids. I'm sorry, nobody in their common sense mind will be nonviolent. Because self-preservation is the law of nature. And stop letting people talk you out your power. Because they say they got the guns. And we taught them everything they know. We taught them everything they know. I was down at Montgomery, Alabama recently. And it was this black educator, this beautiful sister from Chicago. But you could tell she was tortured. She was talking about how her kids didn't want to hear all that slave stuff no more. About black folks being slaves. I said, sister, those were the slaves they brought over here. Those were scientists, engineers, carpenters, architects, culinary artists, agricultural gurus. Those were the master teachers they brought over here. I say, for example, you just look at the fact that Larry Bird always said that the black man taught him how to play basketball. Who taught Eminem how to rap? There's a museum for Hank Williams Sr. down in Montgomery, Alabama. He's one of the kings of country music. His master teacher was a black man named Rufus Payne, who taught him at the age of 8 how to play the guitar and sing. And he acknowledged that Rufus Payne was the one that taught him, since he was 8 years old, how to sing and play the guitar. Matter of fact, the Grand Ole Opry put a memorial statue in his honor in the graveyard where he's buried in Montgomery. That's Rufus Payne. George Gershwin, his master teacher was a black man named Lucky Roberts, who was a jazz piano master who taught George Gershwin how to play the piano and how to compose music. And he also was a millionaire twice over from his real estate dealings in New York City. Now, Lucky Roberts was from Philadelphia. So you can Google all this stuff up and it will verify what I'm saying is true, but it's not amplified. It's not amplified. Because behind every great white man is a great black mentor that he stole from. Thomas Edison had a factory full of black people working on his inventions. He has somebody like Louis Latimer, who developed the filament for the light bulb to make it last longer, but also designed the first phone for Alexander Graham Bell. And he came from former enslaved Africans. That's who we are, black people. We are the creators of civilization. That's who we are. But yet, when we don't know that, we do ourselves a disservice. We do our kids a disservice. We do our We do our children a disservice. We do our grandchildren a disservice. We do generations not yet born a disservice. We don't try to amplify this and make it known, better known, through our own institutions, through our own devices. We got to be able to disseminate this stuff.
As much as we like to disseminate information on the Meek Mill and Drake beef, NBA highlights, we got to have the same fervor and passion when it comes to our own survival. Because right now we are at war on all different levels. Everything white people is war. All they understand is military science and money. Everything with education, culture, health, everything, the environment, everything with them is war. Everything's about power. But they are the masters of illusion. They have no real power. The emperor has no clothes. Matter of fact, the emperor got a sex change. And he still can't fool our asses. We know who he is. Or it is. So while I'm saying, black folks, do you know what time it is? It is time for stuff together. Because we are at war. We are at war, people. And it's the most valuable. Oh, excuse me. I said valuable. The most valuable real estate, like Chuck D said, to paraphrase Brother Chuck D of Public Enemy, the most valuable real estate in your ear. Valuable, the most prized real estate exists between your ears. It's your mind. Because once they control your mind, they can control everything else. So, like I said, white people are dying faster than they can reproduce. But they are making sure they can take enough of us with them. But we can't even die out. All the stuff that they do to us, like with Planned Parenthood, it's backfiring. That's why they're exposing Planned Parenthood to try to stop. Because, you know, millions of black babies have been lost through abortions. I talk about that all day. We don't want to talk about it. But the fact that we have abortions let you know that this system is not fit for human beings. The fact that we need abortions in this system shows you that the system is not made for humanity. It's not made for human beings, and sure as hell is not made for black people. Think about that, black folks. You know, think about that. This is very important. Like, you know, I feel the need to just keep on amplifying my voice. I get a lot of criticism and so like that for things I do or try to do, but at least I'm trying to do them. And when you're on a path of success, you're going to have a lot of failure in your way. Because success is built on failure. And really, like a mentor of mine once told me, well, you can only fail if you stop trying. So if you haven't stopped, if you don't stop trying, you can never fail. Even if you die, your energy can't be killed. It transfers. That's how powerful we are, people. That's why they're willing to kill us. But like they say, you can kill a man, can't kill an idea. You can kill a revolutionary, but can't kill a revolution. It's on, black folks. Whether you ready or not, I'm telling people in Memphis, you better wake up, get your stuff in order. Because the 1 year anniversary of Mike Brown, the St. Louis uprising, August 9th. Katrina happened, damn, August 29th, 28th. Brown, what is it about black folks and it's the 28th through the 31st? Emmett Till, Katrina, the birth dates of Michael Jackson, Charlie Parker. So many horrible and great things have happened to black folks. March on Washington between August 28th and 31st. Understand, family, where we at. Memphis, you long overdue. 28 cop killings, 28 killings by police in the last 3 years. You're on the New Madrid fault line. The last major earthquake we had on the New Madrid fault line was back in the 1810s, around the War of 1812. We are due for judgment, people. Go to church. Black church, that silence is very damning. The silence from the black church is very damning. And it's going to, in history way, it's not going to be kind to the black church, especially all the good that the black church used to do. You know, like Dick Gregory said, two of the most powerful forces that America has ever known was the black woman in the black church. You got black women dying in jail. You got black women getting arrested and assaulted on black church grounds on their way to crucifixion. And the black church, they said a damn thing. Why should I go to Sunday, to church on Sunday, on Wednesday, when I'm going to die? I ain't talking about a physical death, but a spiritual death. So many of us have died a spiritual death. And a spiritual death is worse than a physical death. A spiritual death, I haven't died. Living your life as a coward, living your life scared, ain't a life to live at all. It's not a life to live at all. It's not a life to live at all. And you pass that energy on to your kids, and they pass on, you creating curses on your people. Yeah, you really believe in forgiving your enemies, forgive yourself. You believe in forgiving your enemies, but you can't forgive yourself. Wow, that is crazy. That is crazy. We got to stop doing this, people.
We got to start forgiving ourselves before we forgive anybody.
And that's the problem that we're facing right now. When I hear black folks say, well,
maybe she smoked too much. Maybe she was too sassy. Maybe her body language was off.
Maybe he just did what he was told to do. Well, maybe if you stop being a coward, and maybe you stop hiding behind the Bible, and maybe if you stop trying to run away from what is your destiny, maybe things will maybe be different. And I'm just tired of hearing
black people say, well, you know,
2015 and they still doing this. It was 1915 they were still doing it. 1915, 2015. What happened in 100 years? The assassination of Booker T. Washington, the premiere of A Birth of a Nation, which led to the resurrection of the Klan all 100 years ago.
The 100th anniversary creation of the Fraternal Order of Police.
World War I, 100 years ago, what's going on. And a black person getting lynched every day and day and a half in this country. Now, a black person getting killed every day and a half.
By the police in this country. The
police always been the Klan.
Police was the original slave catchers.
Black folks say silly shit. Like, well, you know, the FBI report said that the Klan have infiltrated police. Well, goddamn it, the Klan infiltrated the FBI.
The FBI infiltrated the Klan.
How did they solve all those civil rights cold cases?
The FBI was in the car with the Klan.
When Viola Liuzzo was killed.
The FBI was in the car with the Klan with Cheney, Swerner, and Goodman. The FBI was at the church with the four little girls got killed.
Okay. It's always an inside job. Since the days of Jesus, it's always been an inside job. Black folks, wake up. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I'm sorry for my rants and raves. I hope it came out well enough.
Because in the words of the great Duke Ellington once more, we love you madly. Keep producing and pushing.
And know that the best is yet to come. God bless everybody.
We don't write policies, you can bet the book. Community of stupid cooks, fat sack your bitch. Crack up surveillance, omnipotent. Craving this for hands of black savages. Over paper cabbages. Lesson for a blind pepper with a whip. With a dumb